touching the bolster pillow as if it were a human being. She stifled a laugh. "Simon?" she whispered. Then she heard the sharp two-tone beep that signaled that a text message had just arrived on her cell phone. The phone itself was lying folded on the bedside table. Clary picked it up and saw that the message was from Isabel. She flipped the phone open and scrolled hastily down to the text. She read it twice, just to make sure she wasn't imagining things. Then she ran to the closet to get her coat.
"Jonathan."
The voice spoke out of the blackness, slow, dark, familiar as pain. Jace blinked his eyes open and saw only darkness. He shivered. He was lying curled on the icy flagstone floor. He must have fainted. He felt a stab of fury at his own weakness, his own frailty. He rolled onto his side, his torn wrist throbbing in its manacle. "Is anyone there?"
"Surely you recognize your own father, Jonathan."
The voice came again, and Jace did know it. Its sound of old iron, its smooth, near tonelessness. He tried to scramble to his feet, but his boots slipped on a puddle of something and he skidded backward, his shoulders hitting the stone wall hard. His chain rattled like a chorus of steel wind chimes.
"Are you hurt?"
A light blazed upward, searing Jace's eyes. He blinked away burning tears and saw Valentine standing on the other side of the bars beside the corpse of Brother Jeremiah. A glowing witchlight stone in one hand cast a sharp whitish glow over the room. Jace could see the stains of old blood on the walls and newer blood, a small lake of it, which had spilled from Jeremiah's open mouth. He felt his stomach roil and clench, and thought of the black formless shape he'd seen before with eyes like burning jewels.
"That thing," he choked out. "Where is it? What was it?"
"You are hurt."
Valentine moved closer to the bars.
"Who ordered you locked up here? Was it the Clave? The Lightwoods?"
"It was the Inquisitor." Jace looked down at himself. There was more blood on his pants legs and on his shirt. He couldn't tell if any of it was his. Blood was seeping slowly from beneath his manacle. Valentine regarded him thoughtfully through the bars. It was the first time in years Jace had seen his father in real battle dress, the thick leather shadow hunter clothes that allowed freedom of movement while protecting the skin from most kinds of demon venom, the electrum-plated braces on his arms and legs, each marked with a series of glyphs and runes. There was a wide strap across his chest, and the hilt of a sword gleamed above his shoulder. He squatted down then, putting his cool black eyes on a level with Jace's. Jace was surprised to see no anger in them.
"The Inquisitor and the Clave are one and the same. And the Lightwoods should never have allowed this to happen. I would never have let anyone do this to you."
Jace pressed his shoulders back against the wall. It was as far as his chain would let him get from his father.
"Did you come down here to kill me?"
"Kill you? Why would I want to kill you?"
"Well, why did you kill Jeremiah? And don't bother feeding me some story about how you just happened to wander along after he spontaneously died. I know you did this."
For the first time, Valentine glanced down at the body of Brother Jeremiah.
"I did kill him. And the rest of the Silent Brothers as well. I had to. They had something I needed."
"What? A sense of decency?"
"This," said Valentine,
and drew the sword from his shoulder sheath in one swift movement.
"Milartek."
Jace choked back the gasp of surprise that rose in his throat. He recognized it well enough. The huge, heavy-bladed silver sword with the hilt in the shape of outspread wings was the one that hung above the speaking stars in the Silent Brothers' council room.
"You took the Silent Brothers' sword?"
"It was never theirs," Valentine said. "It belongs to all Nephilim. This is the blade with which the angel drove Adam and Eve out of the garden. And he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword which turned every way," he quoted, gazing down at the blade.
Jace licked his dry lips.
"What are you going to do with it?"
"I'll tell you that," said Valentine. when I think I can trust you, and I know that you trust me.
Trust you? After the way you sneaked through the portal at Renwick's and smashed it so I couldn't come after you? And the way you tried to kill Clary?
I would never have hurt your sister, said Valentine with a flash of anger, any more than I would hurt you.
All you've ever done is hurt me. It was the Lightwoods who protected me.
I'm not the one who locked you up here. I'm not the one who threatens and distrusts you. That's the Lightwoods and their friends in the Clave.
Valentine paused.
Seeing you like this, how they've treated you, and yet you remain stoic. I'm proud of you.
At that, Jace looked up in surprise, so quickly that he felt a wave of dizziness. His hand gave an insistent throb. He pushed the pain down and back until his breathing eased.
What?
I realize now what I did wrong at Renwick's, Valentine went on. I was picturing you as the little boy I left behind in Idris, obedient to my every wish. Instead, I found a headstrong young man, independent and courageous. Yet I treated you as if you were still a child. No wonder you rebelled against me.
Rebelled? I...
Jace's throat tightened, cutting off the words he wanted to say. His heart had begun pounding in rhythm with the throbbing in his hand. Valentine pressed on.
I never had a chance to explain my past to you, to tell you why I've done the things I've done.
There's nothing to explain. You killed my grandparents. You held my mother prisoner. You slew other shadow hunters to further your own ends.
Every word in Jace's mouth tasted like poison.
You only know half the facts, Jonathan. I lied to you when you were a child because you were too young to understand. Now you are old enough to be told the truth.
So tell me the truth.
Valentine reached through the bars of the cell and laid his hand on top of Jace's. The rough, calloused texture of his fingers felt exactly the way it had when Jace had been 10 years old.
I want to trust you, Jonathan, he said. Can I?
Jace wanted to reply, but the words wouldn't come. His chest felt as if an iron band was being slowly tightened around it, cutting off his breath by inches.
I wish, he whispered.
A noise sounded above them, a noise like the clang of a metal door. Then Jace heard footsteps, whispers echoing off the city's stone walls. Valentine started to his feet, closing his hand over the witchlight until it was only a dim glow and he himself was a faintly outlined shadow.
Quicker than I thought, he murmured, and looked down at Jace through the bars.
Jace looked past him, but he could see nothing but blackness beyond the faint illumination of the witchlight. He thought of the roiling dark form he had seen before, crushing out all light before it.
What's coming? What is it? He demanded, scrabbling forward on his knees.
I must go, said Valentine. But we're not done, you and I.
Jace put his hand to the bars.
Unchain me. Whatever it is, I want to be able to fight it.
Unchaining you would hardly be a kindness now.
Valentine closed his hand around the witchlight stone completely. It winked out, plunging the room into darkness. Jace flung himself against the bars of the cell, his broken hand screaming its protest in pain.
No, he shouted. Father, please!
When you want to find me, Valentine said, you will find me.
And then there was only the sound of his footsteps rapidly receding and Jace's own ragged breathing as he slumped against the bars. On the subway ride uptown, Clary found herself unable to sit down. She paced up and down the near-empty train car, her iPod headphones dangling around her neck. Isabel hadn't picked up the phone when Clary had called, and an irrational sense of worry gnawed at Clary's insides. She thought of Jace at the Hunter's Moon covered in blood. With his teeth bared in snarling anger, he'd looked more like a werewolf himself than a shadow hunter charged with protecting humans and keeping downworlders in line. She charged up the stairs at the 96th Street subway stop, only slowing to a walk as she approached the corner where the Institute hulked like a huge gray shadow. It had been hot down in the tunnels, and the sweat on the back of her neck was prickling coldly as she made her way up the cracked concrete walk to the Institute's front door. She reached for the enormous iron bell pole that hung from the architrave, then hesitated. She was a shadow hunter, wasn't she? She had a right to be in the Institute, just as much as the Lightwoods did. With a surge of resolve, she seized the door handle, trying to remember the words Jace had spoken. In the name of the angel, I... The door swung open onto a darkness starred by the flames of dozens of tiny candles. As she hurried between the pews, the candles flickered as if they were laughing at her. She reached the elevator and clanged the metal door shut behind her, stabbing at the buttons with a shaking finger. She willed her nervousness to subside. Was she worried about Jace, she wondered, or just worried about seeing Jace? Her face, framed by the upturned collar of her coat, looked very white and small, her eyes big and dark green, her lips pale and bitten. Not pretty at all, she thought in dismay, and forced the thought back. What did it matter how she looked? Jace didn't care. Jace couldn't care. The elevator came to a clanging stop, and Clary pushed the door open. Church was waiting for her in the foyer. He greeted her with a disgruntled meow. What's wrong, Church? Her voice sounded unnaturally loud in the quiet room. She wondered if anyone were here in the Institute. Maybe it was just her. The thought gave her the creeps. Is anyone home? The blue Persian turned his back and headed down the corridor. They passed the music room and the library, both empty, before Church turned another corner and sat down in front of a closed door. Right then. Here we are, his expression seemed to say. Before she could knock, the door opened, revealing Isabel standing on the threshold, barefoot in a pair of jeans and a soft violet sweater. She started when she saw Clary. I thought I heard someone coming down the hall, but I didn't think it would be you, she said. What are you doing here? Clary stared at her. You sent me that text message. You said the Inquisitor threw Jace in jail. Clary! Isabel glanced up and down the corridor, then bit her lip. I didn't mean you should race down here right now. Clary was horrified. Isabel? Jail? Yes, but... With a defeated sigh, Isabel stood aside, gesturing for Clary to enter her room. Look, you might as well come in. And shoo you, she said, waving a hand at Church. Go guard the elevator. Church gave her a horrified look, lay down on his stomach, and went to sleep. Cats, Isabel muttered and slammed the door. Hey, Clary. Alec was sitting on Isabel's unmade bed, his booted feet dangling over the side. What are you doing here? Clary sat down on the padded stool in front of Isabel's gloriously messy vanity table. Isabel texted me. She told me what happened to Jace. Isabel and Alec exchanged a meaningful look. Oh, come on, Alec, Isabel said. I thought she should know. I didn't know she'd come racing up here. Clary's stomach lurched. Of course I came. Is he all right? Why on earth did the Inquisitor throw him in prison? It's not prison exactly. He's in the Silent City, said Alec, sitting up straight and pulling one of Isabel's pillows across his lap. He picked idly at the beaded fringe sewed to its edges. In the Silent City? Why? Alec hesitated. There are cells under the Silent City. They keep criminals there sometimes before deporting them to Idris to stand trial before the council. People who've done really bad things. Murderers, renegade vampires, shadow hunters who break the accords. That's where Jace is now.
Locked up with a bunch of murderers?
Clary was on her feet, outraged.
What's wrong with you people? Why aren't you more upset?
Alec and Isabel exchanged another look.
It's just for a night, Isabel said. And there isn't anyone else down there with him, we asked.
But why? What did Jace do? He mouthed off to the Inquisitor. That was it, as far as I know, said Alec. Isabel perched herself on the edge of the vanity table.
It's unbelievable.
Then the Inquisitor must be insane, said Clary. She's not, actually, said Alec. If Jace were in your mundane army, do you think he'd be allowed to mouth off to his superiors?
Absolutely not. Well, not during a war, but Jace isn't a soldier.
But we're all soldiers. Jace as much as the rest of us. There's a hierarchy of command, and the Inquisitor is near the top. Jace is near the bottom. He should have treated her with more respect.
If you agree that he ought to be in jail, why did you ask me to come here? Just to get me to agree with you? I don't see the point. What do you want me to do?
We didn't say he should be in jail, Isabel snapped. Just that he shouldn't have talked back to one of the highest-ranked members of the Clave. Besides, she added in a smaller voice, I thought that maybe you could help.
Help? How?
I told you before, Alex said. Half the time it seems like Jace is trying to get himself killed. He has to learn to look out for himself, and that includes cooperating with the Inquisitor.
And you think I can help you make him do that? Clary said, disbelief coloring her voice. I'm not sure anyone can make Jace do anything, said Isabel. But I think you can remind him that he has something to live for.
Alec looked down at the pillow in his hand and gave a sudden savage yank to the fringe. Beads rattled down onto Isabel's blanket like a shower of localized rain. Isabel frowned.
Alec, don't.
Clary wanted to tell Isabel that they were Jace's family, that she wasn't, that their voices carried more weight with him than hers ever would. But she kept hearing Jace's voice in her head saying, I never felt like I belonged anywhere, but you make me feel like I belong.
Can we go to the Silent City and see him?
Will you tell him to cooperate with the Inquisitor? Alec demanded.
Clary considered. I want to hear what he has to say first.
Alec dropped the denuded pillow onto the bed and stood up frowning. Before he could say anything, there was a knock at the door. Isabel unhitched herself from the vanity table and went to answer it. It was a small, dark-haired boy, his eyes half hidden by glasses. He wore jeans and an oversized sweatshirt and carried a book in one hand.
Max, Isabel said with some surprise, I thought you were asleep.
I was in the weapons room, said the boy, who had to be the Lightwood's youngest son. But there were noises coming from the library. I think someone might be trying to contact the Institute.
He peered around Isabel at Clary.
Who's that?
That's Clary, said Alec. She's Jace's sister.
Max's eyes rounded.
I thought Jace didn't have any brothers or sisters.
That's what we all thought, said Alec, picking up the sweater he'd left draped over one of Isabel's chairs and yanking it on. His hair rayed out around his head like a soft dark halo, crackling with static electricity. He pushed it back impatiently. I'd better get to the library.
We'll both go, Isabel said, taking her gold whip, which was twisted into a shimmering rope, out of a drawer and sliding the handle through her belt. Maybe something's happened.
Where are your parents? Clary asked.
They got called out a few hours ago. A fae was murdered in Central Park. The Inquisitor went with them, Alec explained.
You didn't want to go?
We weren't invited.
Isabel looped her two dark braids up on top of her head and stuck the coil of hair through with a small glass dagger.
Look after Max, will you? We'll be right back.
But, Clary protested,
we'll be right back.
Isabel darted out into the corridor, Alec on her heels. The moment the door shut behind them, Clary sat down on the bed and regarded Max with apprehension. She'd never spent much time around children. Her mother had never let her babysit. And she wasn't really sure how to talk to them or what might amuse them. It helped a little that this particular little boy reminded her of Simon at that age, with his skinny arms and legs and glasses that seemed too big for his face. Max returned her stare with a considering glance of his own, not shy, but thoughtful and contained.
How old are you? He said finally.
Clary was taken aback.
How old do I look?
14.
I'm 16, but people always think I'm younger than I am because I'm so short.
Max nodded.
Me too, he said. I'm 9, but people always think I'm 7.
You look 9 to me, said Clary.
What's that you're holding? Is it a book?
Max brought his hand out from behind his back. He was holding a wide, flat paperback about the size of one of those small magazines they sold at grocery store counters. This one had a brightly colored cover with the Japanese kanji script on it under the English words. Clary laughed.
Naruto, she said,
I didn't know you liked manga. Where did you get that?
In the airport. I like the pictures, but I can't figure out how to read it.
Here, give it to me. She flipped it open, showing him the pages. You read it backward, right to left instead of left to right, and you read each page clockwise. Do you know what that means?
Of course, said Max.
For a moment, Clary was worried she'd annoyed him. He seemed pleased enough, though, when he took the book back and flipped to the last page. This one is number 9, he said. I think I should get the other 8 before I read it. That's a good idea. Maybe you can get someone to take you to Midtown Comics or Forbidden Planet.
Forbidden Planet?
Max looked bemused, but before Clary could explain, Isabel burst through the door, clearly out of breath.
It was someone trying to contact the Institute, she said, before Clary could ask. One of the Silent Brothers. Something's happened in the Bone City.
What kind of something?
I don't know. I've never heard of the Silent Brothers asking for help before.
Isabel was clearly distressed. She turned to her brother.
Max, go to your room and stay there, okay?
Max set his jaw. Are you and Alec going out?
Yes.
To the Silent City?
Max, I want to come.
Isabel shook her head. The hilt of the dagger at the back of her head glittered like a point of fire.
Absolutely not. You're too young.
You're not 18 either.
Isabel turned to Clary with a look half of anxiety and half of desperation.
Clary, come here for a second, please.
Clary got up, wonderingly, and Isabel grabbed her by the arm and yanked her out of the room, slamming the door shut behind her. There was a thump as Max threw himself against it.
Damn it, said Isabel, holding the knob. Can you grab my stele for me, please? It's in my pocket.
Hastily, Clary held out the stele Luke had given her earlier that night.
Use mine.
With a few swift strokes, Isabel had carved a locking rune onto the door. Clary could still hear Max's protest from the other side as Isabel stepped away from the door, grimacing, and handed Clary back her stele.
I didn't know you had one of these.
It was my mother's, said Clary. Then she mentally chided herself. Is my mother's. It is my mother's.
Huh.
Isabel thumped on the door with a closed fist.
Max, there's some power bars in the nightstand drawer if you get hungry. We'll be back as soon as we can.
There was another outraged yell from behind the door. With a shrug, Isabel turned and hurried back down the hallway, Clary at her side.
What did the message say? Clary demanded.
Just that there was trouble?
That there was an attack. That's it.
Alec was waiting for them outside the library. He was wearing black leather Shadowhunter armor over his clothes. Gauntlets protected his arms, and marks circled his throat and wrists. Seraph blades, each one named for an angel, gleamed at the belt around his waist. Are you ready? He said to his sister. Is Max taken care of?
He's fine,
she held out her arms.
Mark me.
As Alec traced the patterns of runes along the backs of Isabel's hands and the insides of her wrists, he glanced over at Clary. You should probably head home, he said. You don't want to be here by yourself when the Inquisitor gets back.
I want to go with you, Clary said, the words spilling out before she could stop them.
Isabel took one of her hands back from Alec and blew on the marked skin as if she were cooling a too hot cup of coffee.
You sound like Max.
Max is 9. I'm the same age as you.
But you haven't got any training, Alec argued. You'll just be a liability.
No, I won't. Has either of you ever been inside the Silent City? Clary demanded.
I have. I know how to get in. I know how to find my way around.
Alec straightened up, putting his stele away.
I don't think...
Isabel cut in. She has a point, actually. I think she should come if she wants. Alec looked taken aback. Last time we faced a demon, she just cowered and screamed. Seeing Clary's acid glare, he shot her an apologetic glance. I'm sorry, but it's true.
I think she needs a chance to learn, Isabel said.
You know what Jace always says? Sometimes you don't have to search out danger. Sometimes danger finds you.
You can't lock me up like you did Max, Clary added, seeing Alec's weakening resolution. I'm not a child, and I know where the Bone City is. I can find my way there without you.
Alec turned away,
shaking his head and muttering something about girls. Isabel held out a hand to Clary. "Give me your stele," she said. "It's time you got some marks." Chapter 6. City of Ashes. In the end, Isabel gave Clary only 2 marks, one on the back of each hand. One was the open eye that decorated the hand of every shadow hunter. The other was like 2 crossed sickles. Isabel said it was a rune of protection. Both runes burned when the stele first touched skin, but the pain faded as Clary, Isabel, and Alec headed downtown in a black gypsy cab. By the time they reached 2nd Avenue and stepped out into the pavement, Clary's hands and arms felt as light as if she were wearing water wings in a swimming pool. The 3 of them were silent as they passed under the wrought iron arch and into the marble cemetery. The last time Clary had been in this small courtyard, she had been hurrying along after Brother Jeremiah. Now, for the first time, she noticed the names carved into the walls: Youngblood, Fairchild, Thrushcross, Nightwine, Ravenscar. There were runes beside them. In Shadowhunter culture, each family had their own symbol. The Waylands was a blacksmith's hammer, the Lightwoods a torch, and Valentine's a star. The grass grew tangled over the feet of the angel statue in the courtyard center. The angel's eyes were closed, his slim hands closed over the stem of a stone goblet, a reproduction of the mortal cup. His stone face was impassive, streaked with dirt and grime. Clary said, "Last time I was here, Brother Jeremiah used a rune on the statue to open the door to the city." "I wouldn't want to use one of the Silent Brothers' runes," Alec said. His face was grim. "They should have sensed our presence before we got this far. Now I'm starting to worry." He took a dagger from his belt and drew the blade of it across his bare palm. Blood welled from the shallow gash. Making a fist over the stone cup, he let the blood drip into it. "Blood of the Nephilim," he said. "It should work as a key." The stone angel's eyelids flew open. For a moment, Clary almost expected to see eyes glaring at her from between the folds of stone, but there was only more granite. A second later, the grass at the angel's feet began to split. A crooked black line rippling like the back of a snake curved away from the statue, and Clary jumped back hastily as a dark hole opened at her feet. She peered down into it. Stairs led away into shadow. Last time she had been here, the darkness had been lit at intervals by torches, illuminating the steps. Now there was only blackness. "Something's wrong," Clary said. Neither Isabel nor Alec seemed inclined to argue. Clary took the witchlight stone Jace had given her out of her pocket and raised it overhead. Light burst from it, raying out through her spread fingers. "Let's go." Alec stepped in front of her. "I'll go first, then you follow me. Isabel, bring up the rear." They clambered down slowly, Clary's damp boots slipping on the age-rounded steps. At the foot of the stairs was a short tunnel that opened out into an enormous hall, a stone orchard of white arches inset with semi-precious stones. Rows of mausoleums huddled in the shadows like toadstool houses in a fairy story. The more distant of them disappeared into shadow. The witchlight was not strong enough to light the whole hall. Alec looked somberly down the rows. "I never thought I would enter the Silent City," he said. "Not even in death." "I wouldn't sound so sad about it," Clary said. "Brother Jeremiah told me what they do to your dead. They burn them up and use most of the ashes to make the city's marble. The blood and bone of demon slayers is itself a powerful protection against evil. Even in death, the clave serves the cause."
"Humph," said Isabel. "It's considered an honor. Besides, it's not like you Mundys don't burn your dead."
That doesn't make it not creepy, Clary thought. The smell of ashes and smoke hung heavy on the air, familiar to her from the last time she was here. But there was something else underlying those smells. A heavier, thicker stench, like rotting fruit. Frowning as he smelled it too, Alec took one of his angel blades out of his weapons belt. "Erythiel," he whispered. "A
and its glow joined the illumination of Clary's witchlight as they found the second staircase and descended into even denser gloom. The witchlight pulsed in Clary's hand like a dying